And we welcome you inside this Monday edition of the Hoopball Sacramento Kings podcast. I'm Sam Caventi, alongside, as always, the incomparable and all-knowing Jill Adge. Jill, I was really hoping I could start this podcast by saying the Kings had a perfect weekend, that everything was good, that we had fun, we're all smiles, which we are for the most part, but the Kings once again come out of Friday-Sunday matchups, splitting them. At home this time, 1-1. We're going to talk about both the games. And we're going to start with the good. We could start with the bad with the game yesterday against the Pacers, but we'll start with the better game, the Friday game against the Hornets, where the Kings absolutely dominated start to finish. Was really never much of a game. 140 to 110, the Kings beat Charlotte. Raining threes, that was the theme of that game. Most points scored for the Sacramento Kings since March 25th, my brother's birthday, March 25th of this last year against the Warriors when they dropped 141. And then they set the record, their franchise's record for threes, 22. We're going to get to the Pacers game. It's kind of funny how Friday they just could miss a three. And then yesterday was the exact opposite, but that's how the Kings play basketball. What were your takeaways?
I mean,
from
that's pretty, Friday's that's pretty win? Consistent right now in the NBA too. I wouldn't just say it's Kings. And that's kind of a theme we've seen looking at other games where you, to me, the fact that they're keeping it close while still not hitting, when I'm watching other games where teams are getting blown out when they're not hitting their threes, like to me, that shows some like, okay, we might not be making as many adjustments as I like, but at least we're finding ways to still be in the game. And I would say like, and in those two games, our defensive rating got better too. So, I mean, two completely different games, right? But our defense still kept us in it. I mean, that's where we last year we were like at 116 to 118. We're 108 right now. I mean, that would have put us in towards the middle of the pack last year, which is where they keep saying they want to be this year. And right now you're at 22 with a 108 rating. But yeah, I mean, and that's one thing I felt yesterday where I know you have Sabonis and Turner who blocked the paint, but I still think you have to find ways to get Rashawn Holmes involved because so much of your offense revolves around him, especially when the three ball's not working. My biggest thing was you had them in foul trouble with over 5 minutes to go and you still continued to chuck. Like I can understand they're making life hard on Rashawn, but you had them at five, like you had Sabonis at five fouls with over 5 minutes left and never even tried to go back at him. Like, that's a problem to me. Like, right. And you were in the penalty for a good amount of time. Like, and you're not, you know, you're not exploiting that. So, and we've seen them do that before. Again, learning experiences, you're hoping they're watching the tape, right? And things will change. But we've seen this team struggle against bigger bigs as well. I was happy they went back to Len because I thought that was a game that fit what he was doing. And I will actually say a lot of the bench was producing more again than what some of the starters were doing, where the starters were in and you saw them kind of going down and then the bench would get them back in it. And then you would substitute again and it would kind of go back down and then they get back in it. We know it's a game of runs and a lot of times it's who makes the last run. I was watching the Clippers and Hornets game after the Kings game. And with 4 minutes left, Hornets were up 8. Clippers went on a 22-0 run to end the game. I mean, it's, you have to play the full, like no matter, even in the Charlotte game, I was like, I had already watched 3 games that night of teams going down, of teams that were down 15 plus, winning. Like no lead is safe in the NBA, regardless if the Kings are down, if they're up. Like it's you got to play the full 48 minutes, right? To give yourself a chance. And I saw like through last season and this season, our records are pretty similar. But the difference to me is in these losses, we're losing by what, like five points or less, yeah, 10 basically. Or less. And last season we were getting blown out in our losses.
And the scores were much larger.
Right. We're 10 games in. So it's, I know we lost, but I'm still trying to keep the focus. And for people that think the Pacers are bad, they're not bad.
No, they're
and
not.
They have a good new coach. And I'll put it this way. Yes, they had injuries. They were without Brogdon and they were without TJ Warren. Well, guess what? They were without them a whole lot last year with this same group. So if you think that this Pacers team who was, you know, down guys don't know how to play together with this lineup, like that's just not the case. TJ McConnell had to start for most of the season last year. And when he starts, he kills it. Like for people that don't play fantasy, like I know we laugh that, you know, using fantasy to correlate to this stuff, but there's a reason he's the number one guy that everybody picks up as soon as Brogdon goes down, because that guy produces. He shouldn't be killing you offensively, but he'll give you assists and he'll give you defense. Him getting around you like for buckets shouldn't happen. So totally agree with those criticisms, but for anything else, like the guy's not a scrub, right? I mean, and again, that team is familiar playing with those lineups without those players. So to me, like, I know we were, you know, I saw a lot of it. Oh, it was a trap game. Yes, because it was afternoon and because there were injuries. I 100% think it was a trap game because it was the afternoon, not based on injuries. And until this team had to play an afternoon game, I really don't believe they'll ever win an afternoon game because we've never seen them come out punching.
No. I take back what I said. We're obviously starting with the Pacers game. I was going to try and start with the good, but the Pacers game yesterday is obviously more relevant. And it's now they're playing the second night of a back-to-back later today.
Well, I was trying to use the Pacers game to show good too, though. No, like, you're even good. Though we lost, it's still like,
I had more notes that I could talk about. And I'm sure you do too, about the Pacers, because as I've said in the past, when you lose, there's more to talk about when you lose. You made a good point in that, where you said the Kings do seem to struggle against teams that are big and physical and have guys down in the low block. And that was even more made clear by the fact that against Charlotte, who they don't have size, they play much of run and gun pace type of system. The Kings can really excel in that, because now they're going against something that's their level. The Pacers play a different style, And that showed.
There were multiple times Luke was, you could see him yelling on the sideline, yelling, go, like, run, trying to get some easy buckets for Orlando, guys running the court, right? Because that's how you can exploit it. And then you saw them not pushing it. Like either they didn't see it or they weren't doing it for whatever reason. And so they were trying to get that going, and it never seemed to, it didn't translate. But that's how they would have got themselves some, 100%, as you were saying, is by picking up that pace. Cause the Kings played right into the Pacers' hands and never tried to take it back.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And that is it. My internet's being a little janky right here, Jill. I hope you can hear me. It's kicking me in and out.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. Sorry. This is what the downside of doing everything over Zoom. And it's a bummer because it's so clear. And I don't think anyone would argue that the Kings' best way to play, and it has been this way for several years, is to run. You run, take De'Aaron, take Tyrese, and you go. And too many times, and yesterday was especially, they didn't do it when they had the chance off a missed shot or just turnover. Like, they didn't run enough. And it kills me, because it's like, you would think by now these players understand their strength is to go. I think a part of it might be the defensive effort has gotten so much better. There's so much more like paying attention on that side that it kind of takes the energy out of them. That's fair.
Yeah.
You know, these guys aren't, you know, video game players where they can just, you know, their energy can be like unlimited, or you sit them on the bench for 3 seconds, bring them back in, and now they're reloaded. Like, they're going to get drained. But it was an ugly offensive showing for both teams. It was definitely like an old school, aggressive, defensive formatted game. But to point a couple stats out that were crazy, they were out rebounded by 21 rebounds, 54-33 in favor of Indiana.
That was your big,
That's your biggest, like, you're circling and highlighting that if you're Luke Walton, saying, well, that lost us the game right there. Especially for a team that already struggled to get defensive rebounds, that's not going to help. And then going from 22 made threes on Friday, they make 10 threes on 34 attempts for 29% accuracy last night.
And even their twos were struggling. Like, they missed a lot. They missed, I wouldn't say gimmies, but they missed quite a few.
Close range.
Because granted, Turner, you know, contested a lot of them. Sure. But Sabonis. Ones that you would normally see them going, where like they
Buddy's hit three.
Every part, they hit every part of the rim and then came out.
That was 100%. Incredible.
Where you're just used to those going in, right? Yeah. Which it just seemed like all the things combined, it was just one of those nights where, or days, it just was not, it was not their day.
And that we I feel like we're going to get used to saying that on a Sunday matinee yeah. game. That's what we say afterwards.
Until they prove otherwise, day. Until, the, yeah.
And this was in Sacramento. They didn't travel to a different time zone. They were in Sac on their home court. So it is a bummer. I give them credit for fighting back in this game. At one point, even taking the lead in the fourth quarter. They just couldn't get that big time shot towards the end. I think Haliburton should have shot a little bit more. I remember you tweeted on one possession where twice we had a screen in front of him. I think Holmes was out setting a high screen and he had to his left and to his right, a chance to just fire a three with some space and he didn't do it. And then he ended up going in the lane, trying to get it to Holmes and the ball was turned over because he missed Holmes.
And there was one where he gave up a three to pass it to Harkless in the corner for one. And I get it. He made a couple last game
those are
the shortened threes. But I think Harkless would even tell you he would have like how to shoot the ball, right? Like if you are open to shoot the three, like shoot it.
Yeah.
You're a good shooter. Shoot it.
No,
and so there were times, and then he got a little bit more aggressive again. It's just, can we for longer in the game? Can we full of Hallie? He's playing so well. I just want him to keep the pedal down.
Right. And just don't shy away. Don't shy away from the tough shots.
Yeah.
And that's why I had no problem with that shot in the final, whatever it was, 10 seconds off the play that was apparently supposed to go to Barnes. Barnes was covered, so it was like a little give and go with Holmes. That's a very deep three. I've seen Haliburton make that three before. Do I think that he should have maybe taken one more dribble in or just put a little bit more on it, obviously?
Or just take a second, right? Like to compose yourself more.
Because he had more time than I think he realized. But am I upset that Haliburton took that shot or that it was Haliburton himself taking it, not like a buddy?
We would say him shoot the ball all the time. Yes.
Yeah. He had the shot. And you make that three, it's a tie game. So I have no qualms about that. I don't know why people were so up in arms about the shot. I think
it's because they thought that, for me, I saw it was them thinking that was the play when we like.
Obviously.
And I don't think that would be the play. And then it was proven it was not the play by Barnes himself and the coaching staff. And that happens. They take away your first option. You go to the next. And at that point, I have no problem with it. Now it was a play. Sure, it would have issues because that should not be a number one drawn up play. But when you're now looking at second, third, fourth options, I have no issue with it. You took what was there and it was a shot that, I don't have an issue with Haliburton taking that.
No, and it was honestly kudos, I guess, to Tyrese Haliburton for adapting when the first initial play that was drawn up wasn't there. He was quick on his feet and said, I'm going to get it to Holmes because he's there. I'm going to take it back and I'm going to shoot.
And he set himself behind Holmes in the screen.
Right. Yeah. He set up his own play in essence that could have tied the game. So that just shows the brilliance that is Tyrese Haliburton, how smart of a player he is to just work with what was in front of him. I love that Harrison Barnes was the one they drew the play up to. Katie Christensen called it. She was like, Harrison seems to be the guy you would probably go to here for his just innate ability to hit those clutch shots. But it seemed like the Pacers knew that themselves. They weren't letting Barnes get anything.
Yeah. And I will say for the Kings right now, for offensive rating, they're number five right now. Like they've improved. And for as much as we see about the Warriors, right, and how like their offense just going off, they're behind the Kings right now in that, shockingly.
That is crazy.
For as frustrated as we get, for these lapses, overall, they're playing well, like well offensively. But I think our thing is we know they can even play better, right?
We've seen that.
We know there's more there. And so that's even more exciting to me. Like if you can finally tap that, yes.
and it's you've made a lot of good points about the fact that what's going to be the key turning point for the Kings is figuring out how to close out these games, how to finish off opponents that either are better than you or, you know, are playing you really tough like the Pacers were.
Yeah, or in your tier, because there's plenty of teams that are, and to me, I kind of see the Pacers as in that tier with the Kings right now. Like, it's, they don't know if they're like totally good, but they're not really bad because they have,
they're definitely not a poor team.
They have talent on their roster, right?
Yes, Caris LeVert is awesome.
Can they get there? Yeah. And at least Pacers with the new coach, can they get there, right? Like, right. We've seen it before with the coach, and then they changed coach, it went down, and now they have a new coach again. Can it go back up? But and so we've seen that with the Kings, right? Like, we kind of thought they were there, and then they weren't there, and then they've kind of shown us a little bit, like, maybe. So it's, can they finally figure it out? And even I liked what De'Aaron said last night. Sean asked him, like, do you see this game as kind of a turning point where you guys weren't totally playing out that great? You came out slow, but you actually had a shot to win it at the end. And his response was, well, we didn't win it. And until we win those games, like, that's when I know. And I'm like, yeah, like, that's what we've been saying. So,
yeah.
I appreciated it, hearing it from him. Yes, it's just words again, but it seems like everyone's kind of on that same picture of,
they have the mindset.
It's all talk right now. And until we actually win it, like, then we know we're getting somewhere.
I can't help but consistently think that they're missing something. It doesn't need to be a crazy trade. You don't need to go get an all-star necessarily, but they're hurting for someone else to come off the bench and score for them. Mo Harkless, I took a note, obviously has not been counted on or asked to score a whole lot, but he's at least had a couple buckets in each game that he's played this year while he started, except for the game that he missed. He didn't score yesterday in 21 minutes. That's tough, Jill, to have that from your starting power forward in 20 plus minutes to not score. He does great defense. He passes the ball. He's a glue guy, and we love glue guys.
Well, that's, but they need to find someone that can do it on both ends, because right now on your bench, you still have the same option that you're having with him. But you're getting it. Defense. You're just getting offense. So again, you're still going to have the same, you're going to have the same juxtaposition problem. Sure. They need depth that can give them an average on both sides. Right. Yes.
So why not?
Is that out there?
Yeah.
That's the question. And add some length, because that will help with the rebounding and everything else. Because if you can have Mo coming off your bench and giving you that defense too, to a bench group, like
that's probably better.
Did last year. We all loved what he did last year on it. So, yeah. But even if you don't do that, it gives you options, right? Based on lineups and who you're playing, you could still throw him out there just as a specialist on someone, right? Like that you need stops with, et cetera. But yeah, they definitely need someone that's going to give you both sides. And that's kind of what we're here, you know, the people that bring up Fox and Simmons and stuff that, you know, it's all about Fox isn't shooting well, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay. Simmons can give you consistent twos, but he's not going to stretch the floor. Right. Yeah. And he'll give you defense, like assists and defense, but you're still not getting a complete package.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So it's like all the options that we're hearing still, you're still finding holes in it. Right.
Yeah.
So if they can just, you know, get, I know people don't like hearing average, but if you can get someone that will just be like consistent on both ends, like sometimes that's all you need.
Hey, the answer though, and I've said it and I'll keep saying it until we see it or I'm proven wrong. The answer could be there right in front of you. It could be in terms of a backup four big that can stretch the floor and score a little bit. It could be Tremezi Metu. We won't even go down the Bagley tree because I think it's pretty obvious now that Bagley is done. I mean, and I was going to get to it in a moment, but shit, if you're not
playing one game in 10 for 10 minutes,
not playing in a 30 point blowout, then yeah, dude, you're not only in the doghouse, you're at the very back locked in. So Metu, I'll say, or our guy tearing up the G League currently in a couple games, Lewis King could really provide an offensive punch coming off the bench, and he can play defense. He can come on the court, allow Harkless to stay on maybe as the four, or Barnes to kick to the four if you're trying to do that. I like what Lewis King can provide them. They're not going to bring him up just yet, nor should they. Let him get a lot of run in the G League. But we know that guy can put the ball in the bucket, which right now on the bench, they don't really have that. And we've been saying that. If it's not Buddy, or if Mitchell's not in an attack mode offensively, then where are you going to get that offense on the bench? I'm just saying Lewis King might be worth a chance here soon if this continues to linger. You know, it's just, it's a missing hole. It's a missing piece of this puzzle, and we don't know what it is necessarily yet, if that makes any sense. It's confusing wording it like that, but I say
I think
trying.
Everyone agrees. It's that, yeah.
We don't know what it is, but we're anxious to find out.
Right. And like Monty said, right, he was gonna, what was his wording was, before making any moves, he wanted to evaluate, like, to start
right.
the year.
That's what a good
roster,
GM does.
Blah, blah, blah. We're seeing it. So now can he deliver, yeah. you know, on.
Can he answer?
So, yeah.
All right. So let's backtrack now. So that's the Pacers game. Lost 94-91. Shot poorly. Didn't rebound. And didn't execute really down the stretch in that final minute, at least offensively. They had a lot of good defensive stands and sets in that game. I was very impressed with their defensive rotation, the intensity. Like, it's getting better and better, it seems, each game. Friday's game. Already touched on the fact that it was the most points they've scored in, I think, 8 months. Franchise record in threes, 140 points, total domination. A key thing I wrote down about this game is they showed in earnest how explosive they can be as a team offensively and defensively if they have good pace from start to finish and they make their threes. Obviously, if you make your threes at this type of rate, you're going to win every game. But I mean, the point remains that they moved the ball so well. They ran up and down the court. They took good threes. It wasn't like they were just, I mean, Heel does what Heel does and hurdles up, you know, some threes that you're like,
they were in good scenarios. Yeah. It was within the flow of the offense.
Right. It fit what was happening.
Yep.
So they're a really hard team to beat when they get running, which is why, again, why they don't do that more, why they forget about it. Some games that are close is beyond me.
Yeah.
But
and the difference. Yeah. Yeah. And like I mentioned earlier too, it's a game of runs, and good teams know how to meet an opposing run with their own run. Like that's how you keep those leads going. Right. Because it's rare that a team sucks for a full 48, right? Like these are
right. They wake
professional
up
players. You go on a streak, like it happens. And so this was, to me, I hadn't really seen this consistently where from start to finish, they took every run and made their own run. And so it was, they were up 20. Okay. Then down 13. Okay. Back up, you know, 25. Okay. Then down 17, back up, you know, and we saw that. I mean, even at the end, it was awesome to see when it got down to 12, they then boom, what was it like the back-to-back threes from Buddy and Mitchell. And it was right back up to, 18. Like they met every single streak with their own and stayed consistent defensively. Yeah. So it was,
the Hornets were at arm's length.
It was so much fun to watch. Like I watched that game, I think like three different times, like just because I wanted to go back and catch certain parts of like, did I see this one? Did I see that? But it was just a lot of fun. And I think everyone had fun watching it. We hadn't seen a game like that in a while. No. We're normally on the opposite end. So, but 100%, like you said, it shows what this team can be capable of. And so can they, you know, and like I mentioned, the Hornets, the next game, they were on the opposite end and then couldn't meet the Clippers run with their own run. And it was a 22-0 run. And they just got killed in the last 4 minutes. So
the fickle game.
Yeah. And so, and I will say that the King, you know, and that's something the Pacers did yesterday with the Kings. They were up pretty much the whole game and the Kings would, you know, kind of get close again. And then the Pacers would extend it. And then, you know, we got it within three at the end. And unfortunately there just wasn't enough time. But
I swear TJ McConnell couldn't miss in the time that I was watching. It was football Sunday. So I was watching a lot of football.
Yeah.
But then when I was watching the game, I was like, can this guy miss anything? I mean, it's incredible. My buddy who I was watching with was laughing. He goes, TJ McConnell is destroying them right now. And I was like, yeah, man, it's almost embarrassing.
And they were giving him really good looks. That's good looks. And that was kind of the issue too. Like I mentioned, he's going to kill you in assists. He's going to get his defensive numbers, but you were letting him get really high percentage offensive
into the paint,
shots. And he's a good enough vet. Right. And they just extended paying him, knowing that Brogdon has his injury history. They paid both of those guys to keep that tandem going because they both have shown that they can coexist together and separately, but we were giving him high percentage shots and you just most vets will take advantage of that.
Who does he remind you of? I can't really put my finger on like what previous player, older NBA player, because he is an old school type of NBA player, in my opinion. He doesn't rely on like his outside shot too much. It's get into the paint, draw a lot of attention, set up a teammate or get that layup. I don't know. I was thinking about it for a minute. He reminded me of like, if we're going to do a King player, it was kind of like Bano vibes. Bano was a very good 3-point shooter.
Yeah, I could see that.
But like the way he plays, where he's just like an ultimate team player who always seems to make the right decision.
And really smart. Yeah. And
yeah, very smart. Like that was Bano. That was Bano on very bad teams. TJ's been, you know, lucky to be on good 100%. Teams.
Yeah.
Where it's exploited a little bit more. It pops.
Yeah. And I'll even say like, you could even say Dragic to an extent. It's like when he's not, you know, the dragon, when he's not hitting side consistently.
Yeah.
Find ways to insert himself in the game and multiple assets. But yeah, no, I think Bano's a good one.
Okay, good. That was one that just, I was like, is that too obvious? Or is it, you know, am I not digging deep enough to think of something
here? Yeah. But they're smart players that know how to read defenses and they find their spots. They're not going to force it. That can kill you.
Yeah. That place is always a place for a player like that. High IQ players. Terrence Davis too also had a very solid game on Friday against the Hornets. More to the point that, you know, what this team can do if every little piece, every player is filling what role is expected of them. I mean, they're definitely, and this is just
how excited they all got for him.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
like, I mean, it was obvious where they were like, I mean, Tyrese was like running down the baseline.
Seriously.
Like,
gotta love Halliburton.
And I think they realized they're going to need
it.
Everybody. Right. Yeah. Like, and so, and you want to get a guy's confidence back up. And I know they threw him in, you know, he threw, I don't like maybe a couple minutes last night.
Yeah. That's
but
weird.
To me, you set him up for failure because you put him in, and you don't have a Fox, you don't have a Halliburton on the court. And to me, when you don't at least have one and your team's not fully clicking, it's rare we've seen them be able to sustain that good play. Eventually you hope that it can happen. Like, right. But, you know, it hasn't happened yet. And then he got the quick pull and I think they put Halliburton back in. So it was like,
you could make like a game, each game of trying to figure out what Luke Walton's rotation is going to be. And like, how many minutes are these guys going to play? Like, shit, man, I don't know that guy. It's like he changes his mind every game.
Yeah.
And it is a little unfair to Terrence Davis because he finally showed you life and what he can provide you off the bench. And yesterday they obviously needed scoring. And yeah, he didn't get much of a chance.
Yeah.
And just someone to set the pace, which he does very well. Yeah. So I feel bad, I guess, for Terrence Davis. And then I really feel bad for Marvin Bagley, who I just wish they would just, again, I know there's a lot of different factors and components to a Jill. But if you're not going to play him in that game against the Hornets, then I really don't know why you're wasting the kid's time.
Yeah.
Anymore.
So I would say in regards to that,
you played Metu ahead of him.
Well, I will say Metu and Jones had not played at all. And yes, that they ended up being up 30, but it wasn't like it wasn't close, right? It wasn't like you had up 30 where you could get him significant minutes. To me, when he finally made the change, there was what, like 3 minutes left. He put in guys that had not touched the court at all. To me, it's more of a slap. If you're going to put him in that 3 minute mark, then you're going to put in your very, very end of bench who has not touched at all. I get the criticism, but to me, if you're going to put him in, I want him in actual minutes, not at garbage.
Yeah.
Show me anything. Right. And that doesn't allow him to prove anything either. Oh, I scored a bunch in garbage time that was completely end of bench for everybody else. Again, I get it because it would give him a run on the court. But I also am not surprised that he literally threw in two guys that had not touched that probably will not touch unless there's an injury. Honestly, unless there's another 30-point game at this point or an injury, I don't see him getting Jones or Metu in. So that could be very well their only time they're going to go in the game too, where if you keep Bagley, I still think there's opportunities where you actually could put him in. So it's, just thinking from like a coach's perspective, I could see it as that you're getting guys in who hadn't touched the court, and this could be one of their few opportunities for the year.
I hope that Bagley thinks of this, that game, just how you explained it, where, you know, it would have been a slap in the face for Luke to put me in. Like, I hope that's how Bagley's thinking of it, because when we were talking on Friday with Mattia, he made a good point about Bagley that his mental state currently, I mean, who knows? It is probably not very confident, nor would you expect it to be, considering everything all the adverse things he's had to go through in his first 3 years in the league. Or 4 years in the league now. It feels like he's been on the team forever now. I don't even know what year he's in. And it is just discouraging in the sense that how are you going to know his trade value? How are you going to really ever get a decent offer if you don't show him the court? That's my thing. I mean, okay, fine. You want to give him good minutes. You want to give him moments that he can actually.
Well, I think that's where you're going to get your value from, right?
Yeah, like, no, true.
But
so put him in there.
But to me, but it's. But they have a good record right now. So I don't think that's going to happen until they start failing. Like, what they have is working. And so right now as a coach, he's worried about his job, not finding Marvin Bagley trade value.
Yeah.
Like right at the end of the day, there was a thing from Rico that was put up on Instagram the other day by someone. And his comment was, "You show up, we're working, we're building days. Make me put you in so I don't lose my job." Like, that was the thing, was honest. Make me so I can put you in, trust you, so I can keep my job.
Right.
Like, so, I mean, again, as fans, we're worried about value, guys sitting on the bench, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, this coaching staff wants to stick around. And so, and as long as they're still in it, I'm not convinced that they make changes unless there is a trade. Because they've made it pretty clear at this point, they think these players right now are more prepared and ready than what he is. And so, again, devil's advocate, like, that's, yes,
very much so.
Like, I mean, like, that clip spoke volumes to me of, make me trust you to put you out there so I keep my job. Like, and they're in the last year of their contract. Like, that's, you know what I mean? They're not worried about value. Like, a front office is.
Yeah.
They're worried about putting whatever they have to put on the court to win the game. And so far they have been in every single game. So it's hard for me to say so far that I think you should be changing.
Makes you think how poor Marvin Bagley is.
I know, and I could be totally wrong.
Practice.
But I mean, that's, yeah. But I do think they're putting such an emphasis on defense. And then, like I've been saying, it's, there are so many bigs that can play offense, mm-hmm. right? But it's the bigs that are getting paid out there. It's usually because they will give you both, or they're giving you defense. Like, it's, yeah.
They know how to play defense.
And even the best in the league are giving you offense and defense, right? That got paid. And I mean, that's why we got such good value for Holmes. And so, unfortunately, like, Marvin is a big that can give you a bunch of offense. He just hasn't been able to give you defense. Like, I'm not saying he's horrible on defense. It's just, they were so bad at defense that I think they would rather have Harkless give them 0 points and have him play defense than,
yeah.
And they're still number five in offense in the league.
Last year scarred them for sure. Some of the games they had to watch in terms of defensive output effort.
Yeah,
I will go on record to say, and I don't know if I've said it on the podcast before, but I've believed this for quite some time, that whenever Bagley does go, wherever he goes next, I 1000% expect him to have, maybe not to the same level, but along the lines of a Julius Randle, like, career renaissance, where Julius Randle's only 26, but the Lakers, ironically, Luke Walton's previous team, had given up on him. He wasn't playing enough defense. He wasn't fitting where they were trying to go. They were trying to be winning now, and he needed a little bit more time.
And that's the big problem, right? Yeah. Winning now. And
so
we're in a 15-year drought, and they just don't have the luxury of
time.
They would have given him all the minutes the last 3 years, right?
Right. I mean,
he would have had
if he was drafted
a plethora.
Years
well, no, minus his injuries. He wouldn't be a weird minute thing. Like, he would have had plenty development minutes. It's, we're now year 15 and a new GM, and he's saying, like, sorry, I can't wait. Like, yeah. I mean, and that's just an unfortunate situation, because I have no issue with Bagley. It's just one of those perfect storms where it's, I feel like they are about development, but it's about getting it done at this point. Like there's a fine line of,
right,
of the development. And
when he gets to Toronto and becomes their starting five and their small ball lineup and really excels, just remember what could have been in Sacramento. Not that the Kings haven't tried everything they can.
Have you seen the length of Toronto though?
Yeah.
They're small ball, but they're all like 6'7", 6'8". That's not the Kings.
No, they're a lengthy group, and Scotty Barnes.
They
is a
will
stud.
Give you defense where they don't necessarily need a rim protector.
Yeah, I've had this theory that they would definitely bring out what's in Marvin, his talent, and he would definitely fit their arc and what they're trying to do. Like they have more patience,
which
and
is
time.
Why there's so many young players that once they get a change of scenery and get a new opportunity, That's all it takes. Unfortunately, it just hasn't worked out with the Kings. And even if he was playing right now, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know if it would. I have nothing against the kid, and I hope he goes succeed somewhere else and it works out for both.
Absolutely.
Like at this point.
Absolutely.
You know,
I just hope
it's a shitty
soon.
Situation.
It really is. Really is for both sides.
It's a no win. Yeah.
It's an equal, God damn it, this sucks.
And without him getting minutes now, it's hard to know what he would be producing and not. Like, it's just, we don't know.
We're all just speculating. Well,
as much as we'd all like to know, we just have no idea. I mean, it could work. We just don't know. Well, but at this point, I got to trust what they're doing.
Speaking of speculation, we're going to go ahead and speculate a little bit more. Look ahead now to tonight's game. Another back-to-back. Last game of this four-game homestand. Trying to get out of it with a 3-1 record, right? Is that right? Did they win their first game in the homestand? Who do they play?
The Kings?
Yeah.
Yeah, they won their first two.
Right. Okay. And then they lost last night. Sorry. It's been a lot of games, a lot of sports.
The Pelicans and then.
Right. Yep, the Pelicans.
Pelicans
Sorry.
And Hornets. You're good. I'd think about it too.
Yeah. I was like, who did they play again? I don't remember. And so Suns come into town tonight. They're now 5-3 Suns. They've started to find their mojo, which is impressive for them considering the bomb that came out about Robert Sarver, their owner, and everything that's coming there. Can't say we don't feel for them as Kings fans. We've been there with owner news that isn't good. It's only if the owner's making headlines, it's obviously bad. Like that's just that's just how it is. If he's in the headlines, you can assume it's something poor. So kudos to the Suns for not letting that really affect them right now and figuring out, you know, that they're obviously still a really good team with a really good head coach. So they're 5-3. They play tonight at 7:00. This is the last game before the Kings head out to another four-game road trip. I credit the NBA for being symmetrical with these stands, four-game road trip, then four-game homestand, then four-game road trip. I mean, they're being consistent. So a very winnable four games coming up for the Kings on the road. We'll touch on that in a second. But tonight, Jill, what are the keys for the Kings to snag a win again against Phoenix and head out on this road trip with smiles on their faces?
There's no reason I'm assuming it's going to be a Holmes and Len rotation again, just based on JaVale McGee and Frank Kaminsky, because Ayton will not be playing.
Right.
And so there's no reason those two should not dominate. Like, I mean, it's.
Yeah. You have the size.
You're both. Yes. So I would say again, similar to how they handled Charlotte. Pace, win the big man game. They can hit some threes. And if they're not hitting it, then adjust. Like, keep adjusting, right? And go to what's working. Do not go away from what's working. Go to what's working. But, and I would say another thing is let Phoenix stars, try and minimize, right? Obviously, what they're going to do. But don't let the supporting cast kill you, which has kind of been the Kings thing before, right? Is the no name that kills you in addition to the star doing what they normally do. So if you can hold the supporting cast, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah.
Because as most teams, the stars are going to do what they're going to do, but can you prevent the outliers?
Someone else from
taking over. Yeah. And like, it's similar to, I'm sure Phoenix is saying the same thing, because the Kings, I'm not sure about last night, but the three games prior, they had seven people in double figures and that's the first time in history that they had done that. So the Kings were hitting people from all over, right? So if you can prevent Phoenix from doing that, I think that would be huge.
Impressive too, because they've been pretty much a 7 to 8 man rotation. So that just means everyone on the that's going on the court is dropping double figures on you. So yeah, probably a point of discussion for Monty Williams and his staff for the Suns tonight. So yeah, your three keys is roughly are pace, out rebound, be aggressive, and then make your shots. You know, to get the lid off the basket. That was
Because I mean, even their twos, right? We're down. So whether it's twos or threes, execute. Yeah, make your shots.
And I think we'll hopefully know very early on, you know, the level intensity, of course, that the Kings are going to play with, how they're going to come out punching, right? Come out and show that yesterday is gone. You know, we're on to today's game, that Halliburton's going to attack. Fox will hopefully be a little bit better from the field. Was 7 of 19 yesterday. And definitely without Ayton on the court, you should be getting the ball down low. If that shows itself to be working early on, which I'd be surprised if it doesn't. I don't want to say this is a winnable game because the Suns are a good team, obviously.
But this is where you can steal one, right? Like without
this is Ayton.
Game you could steal.
Thank you. This is like a prototypical. We can snag this, say thank you very much, and move on to our road trip. And it would be huge. It'd be huge, Jill, to go out on this road trip 6-5, above 500 through 10 games, through 11 games, through, you know, double digit games. And that'd be a confidence boost to beat the Suns twice, home and away, this early in the season.
Right. And similar to what our issues were last year, right? Like we had the long losing streaks. And I remember, I don't know if it was a coach or a player saying, like, how much you can help yourself if you can not let yourself get like 2 to 3 losses in a row. Like if you can just keep cutting off, right? Like even if it's win, loss, like you end up 500. So if you can prevent the loser, because I mean, the Suns aren't, I mean, you have the Suns and then the Spurs aren't a pushover either. So
they're not off to a good start.
They've been playing better as of late.
Yes. If
these are games, if you can steal, like it helps in the long run. Yeah.
I think it was my buddy who's been on the show, Sean Holko, who told me, I think it was during last year's, one of the losing streaks, after the season, after the Kings didn't make it, he goes, it's crazy to think, Sam, that if you just take one of those 9-game losing streaks and make it a 7-game losing streak, so still fucking horrible, you make the play-in that circumstance.
That's four more games you would have won.
Away on one of those streaks by just a little, where it's still a horrible losing streak, like you're wanting to gouge your eyes out watching a play, but that would have been all the difference. So yeah, that is definitely a good point. Can they avoid stacking up a lot of losses?
Yeah, and maybe that's where Rico came up with the stack days, right? Every day they're looking as their 0-0 again, right? Like he said, every day it's essentially, that's their motto this season, is you're 0-0 going into it and you're stacking. So if you can go 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, or, you know, like if
it's always the best way to look at it. Yeah. I feel like take it one game at a time.
Yeah. So when you look ahead, his was like 5. And so they've just cut it down to 1. I mean, with this team, you got to cut it down to 1.
Yeah.
So
it always seems like when you look ahead, that's when you get lost, or that's where you know, cliche
handle
like,
today.
Yeah.
Handle
you forget today. What's in front of you. If you look farther, it's a good thing to say when you're afraid of the future. It's like, hey, well, don't worry about it then, you know, just worry about today. Well,
I mean, yeah, especially for a team that has been wanting to change the corner and keep saying they want the smoke and all that, like focus on today and you will get there.
Yeah. Now I could be wrong about this. I'm pretty confident the first two games of this road trip. So yeah, you said they play the Spurs, then they play the Thunder. Those are the two youngest teams in the NBA. I'm pretty confident in that. It's the youngest roster Popovich has had in San Antonio ever. I know that for a fact. And the Thunder, I think just common knowledge, have to have the youngest team.
I think even if you take that away, like that 100% would make it. If anything, he would bring it up somewhat because I think he might be the one over 30 player. Who, he's like right around there. Thad Young on the Spurs.
Yeah. And then the Thunder have like Derek Favors is the only old guy on the team.
Right. Like both of those teams, you take those guys away. Yeah, both like they're all super forwards. Young. Yeah.
So to say that those are games that they're going to be tough. The Thunder have already beaten the Lakers twice. They just finally beat a team that wasn't Los Angeles.
They play hard, right?
They do play hard. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a budding star. Josh Giddey is going to be a guy that's not going to do anything really in the stat sheet, but do all the things that don't go in the stat sheet in a game. Pass the ball well, do his job very well. He's a really good young player. Really good at hitting on the ladies too. I think you saw that video. It was like the two Stanford women's players.
It
or
was
something.
A Stanford and a Cal player. Yeah.
Good for him. That video went viral.
Game recognized
nobody,
game.
Yes. Nobody yeah. knew the context of what was happening, but it just seemed really funny. He does look a lot like Timothy Chalamet too. Whose name I always butcher. I know that's not how it's pronounced. I just like to say it wrong.
Has a nice accent.
Yeah. Timothy Chalamet. He just gives me those vibes. I think it's the hair. But no, both teams with tons of young. Yes, definitely there. Two teams with a lot of good young talent. They're going to face to start the road trip, but two teams that don't have experience. The Kings have, crazy as it is, more like been there, done that type of players and games than those teams. And then the last two games, Detroit, one of the worst teams in the league, and Minnesota, who we don't really know what Minnesota is yet. They're still trying to figure it out. They just blew in one of their last games a huge lead in a game that they should have won. And that's apparently been a theme in Minnesota early on, is a lot of winnable games that they've choked away at the end or held on to win by just barely, you know, scraping through. So all that to say, Jill, four games on the road, all four of them, can't believe it's being uttered, very winnable games. So makes it even more imperative the Kings can snag a win, steal a win, however you want to say it, against Phoenix tonight. Because if you go on this road trip and it'll just say 3-1, then you come back home and all of a sudden you're 9-6. An incredible first 15 games, I'd say, by Kings standards, if you can pull that off. But starting with today, got to beat Phoenix. Do you have any, you know, we'll obviously get to it later, but do you have any keys or just really things you want to see on this next road trip? After we saw one road trip already, those first four games, against tough opponents, what going into this road trip do you want to see the Kings do better at?
Like, they were close, right? With these four particular teams, again, like keeping along the 500 line. Yes, these are games they should win, but at the end of the day, I will still be happy if they like, if we're coming back and we're still we're still around 500. Yes, I know we should go up, but to me, take care of business, take care of business and close, let's see those. We keep saying that those first games were learning experiences, right? To learn how to close out games. You've been saying that for years. Like, please let us finally see it.
Yeah.
We saw it somewhat in the Charlotte where they got it down to 12, but it never really got within that under 10 point, you know what I mean? Game. But take care of business and show us that you are learning from those non-closeouts, because they should win these four games. They should.
Yeah. Again, were they? Should. Probably not.
I know, but every team, every team has a shot. But
yes,
if this team wants to prove to us that they're different, then take care of business. This is how they're going to have to keep showing it. We can say all day, we think they should win, but until they actually show us,
right?
I mean, it's,
we're just saying nothing.
We're still in that, oh, well, they should be. Unfortunately, I mean, it's every year we keep saying that, but with how they've played these first, 10 or 11 games,
10 games.
They should beat these teams.
With the exclusion of Minnesota, which is the last game of that road trip, those first three teams will play the style, and you can play yourselves the style that you want to play, which is run and gun, because they're not teams with size.
Yep.
They're not teams that really get it down low. They're shooting a lot of threes. They're playing really fast. Yep. They're moving the ball. That's how the Spurs, the Thunder, and the Pistons, that's how they play. Cool. You can match up with that. No problem. You showed it against Charlotte. So do that.
And bring your transition D. Yeah.
Bring your transition D. Take care of business. Maybe on the extended road trip, maybe they'll bring up someone like a King or a Ramsey, and we see them get a little run for the first time. I'm just throwing shit out there for no reason.
They handle business,
At some point, this rotation, I hope, just expands a little, just because you just are going to burn everyone out so early, and I hate that.
As long as they're close, they're not going to risk.
Understandably.
And then, you take care of business, right? And play like you did against Charlotte, against these bad teams, because these teams aren't even playing as good as Charlotte was playing, on a consistent level. Charlotte had been playing well.
Yeah.
And so yes, if those guys are there and they do what they're supposed to do, there can be opportunity 100%. But if it's close, again, I just don't think you're going to see it, and it's going to end up wearing these guys out. But at the end of the day, the coaches are also,
a lot of,
we'd be killing them if they lost because they put in, one of those just to players. Please
me.
But I'm totally with you. Like at some point it's going to catch up. So just handle your business and then you can extend. But
that's a problem for future, right? That's what we don't need to worry about right now. We'll cross that bridge when it comes. A lot of fun basketball coming up. The Kings have yet to make us fully rip our hair out and start screaming and yelling because it seems like they're still figuring out what kind of team they are, but they're exciting us. They've been in every game. It's been a different theme, a different story so far through 10 games. Again, Kings versus Suns in Sacramento tonight, and then they head out on the road trip. That's going to do it for us, though, on this Monday podcast. We'll be back Wednesday to review the Suns game and then dive more into this road trip that lies ahead. Everyone have a great Monday.
Thanks as always.
Slater, dudes.